So this morning we were discussing the subject of mantra and the repetition of mantras in meditation as a means for spiritual progress. So I mentioned a few important principles behind the psychology of recitation of mantra. Now Patanjali says that through the practice of mantra and meditation, we are actually sublimating our psychological and spiritual resources to achieve a higher spiritual goal. So that's why he says yoga is defined as chitta vritti nirodha. Mind has such something, mind stuff. Chittam, sometimes it's called in Sanskrit. It has got different forms of movements and functions. Normally it is highly distracted. Chinna, usually vichinna. Vikshipta and vikshipta, both are right. They become highly distracted. Like the flow of water in a river. When it starts raining, the water may flow into canals, may flood the farmlands. But on the other hand, if we construct a dam across, we harness the flow of water. And out of that, we can use this water for irrigation, for hydroelectric projects, and innumerable other useful means of ways of practical utility. Similarly, if mind which is so distracted and divided into so many mutually conflicting vrittis, if these vrittis and distractions can be harnessed, can be channelized, then it becomes a great potent force. Sometimes students ask the question, we don't remember, we can't remember. Sometimes we often tell us, well, we cannot concentrate on a subject or what we have studied, we are not able to recollect in time. It only means we have not studied with enough concentration. And if we cannot study with concentration, it means we were concentrating on something else while trying to study. That's what. See, mind will always seek its own food. If you don't give good food to mind, mind will take unhygienic food. And that will make the mind sick. And sickness of the mind means distraction, disappointments, anxieties. In other words, a mind which is completely dissipated becomes useless as a tool for normal human pursuits also. So Patanjali says, normally the human mind is distracted, kshipta and vikshipta, divided into so many distracting channels. Maybe in the life of an Einstein or Newton, in those days where scientists have to use so much of their brain power and power of contemplation, power of constant thinking, contemplating on the same subjects, they had reached a very high level of concentration, which Patanjali calls aikagra, means a state of mind where all vrittis converts and become focused on a single point of concentration. That's possible only when we make use of our own mind instead of electronic gadgets. But in modern times, the usefulness of human power of retention, memory, all these, it has come down with the popularity of modern gadgets. What I mean to say, when we make proper use of this power of concentration, mind becomes a mighty tool in our hands. And whatever we read even once we remember. Can give an example how mind works. That's important to understanding mantra. You may remember one incident in Sri Ramakrishna's life. Sri Ramakrishna, the teacher, the guru of Swami Vivekananda, refers to an episode in his own life. Once the manager of the temple, Rani Rasmani, who was the proprietor of the temple where Sri Ramakrishna was living, she was visiting the temple and she was trying to meditate. And then she was perhaps thinking of her accounts. She had innumerable properties, bank deposits, and maybe hundreds of servants. She was thinking of those things, sitting in front of the sanctum sanctorum of the temple, trying to concentrate on God. Instead of that, she was thinking of this. Sri Ramakrishna, of course, says he gave her two slaps to bring her to consciousness. And she was thankful for that, because Sri Ramakrishna could see with his mind what was going on in this old lady's mind. And he tried to correct her. The idea is, sometimes when we try to concentrate on something, we are not able to concentrate because we are concentrating on something else. Mind is moving in another direction. Mind doesn't often listen to our dictates, our instructions. So, Patanjali says, we need to sublimate our desires. We need to give promotion to our desires. Everybody has got desires. Everybody has got a point of concentration. People are able to concentrate on those things in which they have a natural interest. If they tell you that they can't concentrate on meditation or japa, it means they can concentrate on something else. The mind doesn't remain quiet. That's why called two types of vrittis are there, you know. As I said, mind stuff. Vrittis means the flow of thought currents. One thought comes, then another thought comes. There's a gap between the two. This is how mind flows. It is not a straight line continuous progression. There is an up and down, it's called. That's how mind wave sometimes called. It goes up, comes down, there's a gap for a split second, and then there is another point of concentration. So mind flows like that. Now the point is, all these movements of the mind, if they can be concentrated on one point, we can start spiritual life. The ultimate goal is to reach a state where mind stuff completely ceases to exist. It becomes one with what spiritual contemplation, spiritual meditation. To go beyond all kinds of tendencies, all vrittis is the goal. But as a beginning, the first step is to give a promotion, to sublimate our tendencies, to be able to concentrate all these tendencies on one point. For that, mantra japa is the first and natural step in the life of a spiritual seeker. As I said earlier, from the grossest level of reciting or repeating the mantras loudly, or chanting or reciting hymns and psalms loudly, to the highest level of mantra japa, where you become one with the essence of mantra. All these are different levels of a progression in spiritual life. Now, what are the obstacles and problems that we encounter in this process? That's the subject of discussion this afternoon. And while discussing this, we will deal with other related topics also. So, as I mentioned this morning, repetition of the mantra with the mind completely concentrated on the essence of that mantra, the word symbol, is the natural and the first practice that every spiritual seeker should undertake. As I said this morning, there are three levels. One is verbal repetition, it's called vachika, where you maybe you are doing your household job, you are perhaps working in the factory or the university, where you get a lot of free time. At that time, if you can verbally repeat, not loudly, of course, without disturbing other people around, at least for our own spiritual practice, it is called verbal vachika, which is gross. The second step is where you can repeat with lips moving. And the third step, the most advanced step, is manasika, mental repetition. But this should be done with perfect concentration on the meaning of the mantra. Now, we are coming to some of the natural obstacles. In fact, they are very general short topics. So we'll discuss this point. Patanjali has got an important sutra on the Samadhipada, 30th. Vyadhi, Sthyana, Samshaya, Pramada, Alasya, Avirati, Bhranti, Darsana, Alabdha, Bhumigattu, Anavasthitattvani, Chitta, Vikshepaha, Te, Antarayaha. Antaraya means obstructions, obstacles, stumbling blocks in spiritual path in general. What are the obstacles? We are discussing the obstacles related to the primary practice of spiritual life, that is recitation of mantra. The first obstacle is vyadhi. Literally it means disease, sickness, illness, etc. Now here a question may be asked, is illness an obstacle in spiritual life? Here we had to discuss the tricks that mind actually plays in our spiritual life. Mind is a very tricky thing, especially for a beginner. There have been innumerable saints and spiritual personalities who were extremely sick physically, but they could focus their mind exclusively on God. Great mystics there may be great mystics who suffered from innumerable physical diseases, but still focused their mind on God. Spiritual ideas. So is disease or illness an obstacle? Well, for an advanced spiritual seeker, illness of the body is absolutely irrelevant. Illness of the body will not distract them from spiritual life. But for a beginner, what happens is, when the body starts showing signs of sickness or illness, the mind will give you an excuse for not doing spiritual practice. That's how sickness becomes an obstacle. Because every time, mind will try to give you excuses, postponement or procrastination. Well, tomorrow I will start. Today perhaps not a good day. Today I have got a lot of work to do. Today I have got so many duties and responsibilities. So, I will have a good start tomorrow. Procrastination is clearly mentioned by the commentators on Patanjali Yoga Sutras as a very natural, tricky method through which mind tries to distract you from spiritual life. So, minor illness, sickness of the body, can be an obstacle. That's why Patanjali himself gives a prescription on how to keep the body free from illness, sickness. So in another sutra, Patanjali gives sthira sukham asana. Asana here means what you normally understand by yogasanas, physical exercises, part of yoga. Yoga studios, what they teach, different physical postures. According to Patanjali, the great spiritual psychologist of ancient India, all these physical exercises have only one purpose in mind: to keep the body physically fit so that physical illness will not be an obstacle in our spiritual practices. That's the only purpose. It's a very important point, remember. So, body should be kept healthy, but then that doesn't mean that we should go to gymnasium every day. If our physical body becomes too strong and muscular, and the physical energy exceeds the mental balance or the energy of the mind, what happens? We become brutes. Because mind will not be able to control the energy of the body. It's like a very mighty, big, strong horse used by a poor horse rider. The horse will take him in its direction. The horse rider will not be able to control the horses. So, if the physical health and strength and energy of a person exceeds the mental strength, mental balance, what happens? That person becomes physically restless. That's why very often the yoga philosophers gave a prescription. When your physical body, physical energy exceeds the mental poise, you should practice what we call in Sanskrit upavasa, it means fasting. So that physical energy comes down, so it in tune with the mental energy level. That's very important, that is an important thing. But Patanjali also prescribes indirectly, and the commentators who wrote important books on yoga, Hatha Yoga, two famous books, Hatha Yoga Pratipika and Gheranda Samhita, Shiva Samhita, these are the three famous books which were written around 3rd century BC on physical exercises. So they insisted again and again that before we start practice of physical exercises, the yogasanas, and breathing exercises, we must be able to fully get established in the internal and external disciplines. For example, non-violence, truthfulness, non-stealing, contentment, and then purity of mind and body, then reading holy books. In other words, in all spiritual practices which are necessary to feed the mind with good thoughts, if we don't get fully established in these 10 fundamental disciplines, means ahimsa, satya, asteya, brahmacharya, aparigraha, shauja, santosha, tapaswadhyaya, isvapranidhana, yama and niyamas. So already they are not directly related, but very important for every spiritual seeker. One should first of all get fully established in the practice of the ideal of non-violence, truthfulness, freedom from greed and desire for things which belong to other people, and not having any desire to receive gifts from others, internal and external purity, contentment, reading holy books, meeting holy persons, and these spiritual disciplines. To give an example, if you practice too much of physical exercises and breathing exercises without getting fully established in the ideal of non-violence, what happens? Violent tendencies will become hyperactive. Whatever natural tendencies we have got in our mind, they become hyperactive when we do physical exercises or breathing exercises, because both create energy and heat. A person who has got greed for money and wealth will become extremely greedy if he practices these things. That's why before starting spiritual practices, one should try to become familiar with these values and moral ideas. That's very important. A beginner may not be fully established, but if he understands these things, he will be able to make rapid progress. To give an example, Sometimes people start the practice of japa in meditation, repetition of mantras in meditation. Some of the activities that they may have done in their childhood days or young days will come to the surface. Okay, what happens, you know? And these ideas will suddenly catch hold of you. And if such people practice intense meditation, these tendencies, undesirable tendencies, become hyperactive. And there is a wonderful illustration of this, how people without any moral, ethical values, when they practice meditation and when they practice intense japa, meditation and concentration, so on. What happens to such people? There is a famous story. The story is about a demon. It's a mythological story, but with a great spiritual message for every spiritual seeker. A demon. His name is Bhasmasura. That is, he's an evil man. But he had a tremendous power of concentration. When he did something, he could do it with heart and soul. But he did not have any ethical, moral values. There are many such people in the world who have got tremendous power of command, concentration, focus. Many of the scourges of humanity. Napoleon, I won't call Napoleon, but Hitler was an example. Genghis Khan was an example. Attila the Hun. Many such people you find. Great generals who have massacred millions of people. They had tremendous power of concentration. Willpower. When they did something, they gave up everything else and focused completely on that. This demon was something of that type. So he practiced meditation, concentration for a long time. See, mythological story. And then an angel, a god, appeared in front of him. So the god perhaps thought this man would ask for something good. After all, he practiced so much of japa, recitation of these some holy words and so on. And what he asked was this: I need only one boon. When I put my hands on somebody, that person should die. Whenever I put my hand on in a person's head, that person should immediately die. That was the only boon he wanted. Now what happened? Shiva was the god. Shiva was a man of words. He had promised. He had first extracted the promise from Shiva that whatever you'd ask, Shiva will give. So he gave that boon. A little gullible he was. Then this man wanted to test on Shiva's head himself. So he ran after him, and Shiva running a helter shelter everywhere, this evil man chasing him all over the world. And then what happened? There was another god. It's a mythological story, like an angel, Vishnu. Vishnu was equally good, but sufficiently shrewd, who could understand, who could see through the game that this demon was playing. So this man was chasing Shiva all over the world. Finally, Shiva disappeared, and he appeared. He entered Vishnu's place, and Vishnu appeared before him. Then the demon said, "Where is Shiva? I want to test his own bone on his own head." So where is he? Then Vishnu laughed. "What a fool you are. Do you think it is ever possible for anyone to give such a boon? It's not possible." So Vishnu shrewdly convinced him that Shiva's boon was not going to work. Otherwise you test it on your own head. And the demon, you know, every wicked evil man will have an Achilles heel within, a weak point within his own system. So this fellow was slightly foolish, and Vishnu told him, "You try to test this on your own head." And Bhasmasura, the demon, put his own hand on his own head, and he died immediately. The point is, this man, the story is illustrated in Bhagavata Purana to show that sometimes evil people practice concentration, but their ultimate goal will be evil, and that leads to their own destruction. So that's why it is stated that before we undertake any kind of spiritual discipline, we must have these fundamental ethical moral values, and we must get fully established in these ethical values. That is non-violence, truthfulness, non-stealing, freedom from greed, and then internal and external purity, contentment, and a kind of resignation to God and His grace, and all these values are necessary. If we don't do that, then these obstructions and distractions are natural. The first one is vyadhi, what's called illness. Even minor illness will give us an excuse to stop the practice of mantra, japa, recitation of mantra or meditation. Therefore, we must be aware of these problems. That's why in this sutra, Patanjali gives a list of these distractions in the practice of recitation of mantra. The second one is dhyana. Dhyana actually means mental lethargy, laziness, due to repressed desires and tendencies. That's also very important. Repression is often a negative problem. Sublimation is a positive advantage. There's a great difference between sublimation and repression. In repression, there's an artificial effort involved. You're keeping the lid over something. You're concealing something. The natural tendencies and impressions, characteristics, which create problems in spiritual life, are not allowed to express themselves. They are concealed. Their power remains intact, but at latent level. Like the sleeping cells. At any time they may come out, but for the time being, you are able to keep them under wraps. That's the means, concealed. Now, what happens in such cases, we may feel a kind of laziness, mental laziness, not physical, mental lethargy. It's called procrastination is a natural characteristic of this problem. The third problem is samsaya, means doubt. An attempt to intellectually analyze and logically interpret our spiritual path. That creates this problem of doubts. There are certain areas where you can analyze, logically explain everything. You can predetermine what is going to happen. In mathematics, in physics, in all technology-related areas, you can be almost sure how a machine is going to work. You can demonstrate these ideas, these theories in a laboratory of science. But in spiritual life, it is not possible. Once we take the first step and go forward, then naturally we are able to understand what's going to be the next step in the right direction. Before that, if we try to clear our doubts, try to logically analyze things, you should understand that it is one of the obstacles in spiritual life. The interpreters like Vyasa and others who interpreted, who wrote elaborate commentaries on Patanjali Yoga Sutras, give a clue as to why these problems are listed here. He says, every spiritual seeker can be on his guard or on her guard against these problems. That's why these problems are explained here. So doubt is good, but doubting tendency is a terrible enemy in spiritual life. Because doubts can never be cleared at the intellectual level. In all other secular branches of learning, we can intellectually, logically analyze the problem and clear the doubts at the intellectual level. But in spiritual life, it is impossible. Therefore, doubting tendency is a great obstacle in spiritual life. As I said this morning, the two important tools of theory of knowledge, epistemological tools that mean direct perception and inference, cannot take us one inch forward in spiritual life. Another obstacle is pramada. Pramada actually means physical laziness, carelessness, not giving full concentration, lack of earnestness in spiritual practices. If you read the scriptures with great concentration, its effect is very positive. But if you read the same book just to pass away time, maybe while waiting for train or the plane, instead of reading New York Times, if you read the Gita or the Bible, the effect will be different. So the spiritual literature, spiritual ideas should be studied and contemplated and imbibed with a very high level of seriousness and concentration. Carelessness in these practices is called pramada. Then again, alasya is also a kind of laziness, but different. Mind appears to be too heavy. Sometimes you feel 12 hours of work in the office, and you come in the evening, you feel mentally and physically heavy, then can we sit and meditate? This is a real problem, a realistic problem. It is not anybody's fault. So maybe the spiritual thinkers will give a clue to solve this problem. This heaviness of mind and body is due to keeping spiritual life and secular life in watertight compartments. That's a real source of the source of the problem. Suppose we take a decision to practice meditation or japa 2 hours in the morning, or 1 hour in the morning, 1 hour in the evening. And at other times, we completely forget spiritual life, the importance of spiritual life. Then it will be a big problem. 12 hours if you spend in an office or a factory, and then come home and start meditation for 1 hour, naturally we'll be tired, exhausted, fatigued, mental and physical heaviness. That's a real implication here. So that thin layer of bifurcation, differentiation between secular and spiritual life should be understood. Actually, there is no distinction between secular life and spiritual life. So great spiritual teachers give one clue. They say we should establish a link between secular duties, responsibilities on the one hand, and spiritual ideas and spiritual practices on the other. There is a gap of 10 hours between these two. So how can we establish a link? That's the main problem. For 10 hours, we live secular life without any psychological, mental association with spiritual ideas. And then all of a sudden, after coming home, we start meditation. We try to do meditation. There'll be fatigue, or any kind of meditation for that. There'll be fatigue, kind of exhaustion. For that, the spiritual psychologist give one solution. Secular life also should be approached from a spiritual angle. If we keep in our mind that every work we do is a kind of spiritual practice. Office work also can be looked upon as a spiritual practice. It's technically called karma yoga. But karma yoga as such is not implied here. The idea is, even while performing the so-called secular non-spiritual duties and responsibilities, which are really non-spiritual, but normally we look upon them as different from spiritual duties, office work, factory work, and so on. Even while performing them, we must keep in our mind that our ultimate goal is not money or external secular prosperity, which is the result of secular work, but secular duties and the prosperity and wealth associated with these duties are necessary, but they do not constitute the supreme ultimate goal of human life. They are needed, but they do not constitute the supreme goal of human existence. The ultimate purpose of human life is spiritual realization, spiritual growth. If that can be kept in mind, even while performing secular duties, we can look upon them from a spiritual angle. So every work becomes an act of worship. Every thought can be spiritualized. Every minute can be spiritual life. That's one way to, that's one remedy for this physical and mental laziness. Then avirati, that's again distraction, the natural wavering tendency of mind. That's a very big problem in spiritual life. As I said this morning, our mind is like a big bag. The bag is full of tendencies and impressions. We have accumulated all these tendencies, not only in this life, but in the previous life also. Some of the tendencies are extremely good. That's why sometimes we feel great enthusiasm to go to a place of spiritual activity. Reading scriptures, listening to spiritual ideas. When we are able to enjoy and relish and experience with great interest and earnestness spiritual ideas, it means these positive spiritual tendencies are dominating for the moment. That's why we are able to withstand the onslaught of spiritual ideas. As I said, you just let people who have no interest in spiritual life listen to all these, they cannot withstand. Even intellectually, they will not be able to withstand the onslaught of spiritual ideas. They'll be terribly bored. Sometimes, you know, I refer to this. Sri Ramakrishna Paramahamsa was living in Dakshineswar temple, Vivekananda's guru. Sometimes good spiritual seekers came there. Sometimes common people who are not interested in spiritual life also came. So they will come together in groups. So some people, some visitors will take great interest in spiritual stories and ideas. But then their friends may not be so interested. So they will be scratching their head and trying to pull the elephant. Let us go back, let us go back. Then Sri Ramakrishna would say, oh, very good. You go around and see the garden, look at the temple, the garden, how wonderful flowers are blooming, all that you can see. So he will give them an excuse for leaving their room, so that others could listen to spiritual ideas with great interest. So, our mind is like a bag. Positive tendencies and impressions will help us. And that's why we are able to take interest in spiritual ideas. But then when we go beyond limit, when we really start something in earnestness, negative tendencies also start operating. They will create conflicts and obstacles. So there is a wavering. There is avirati. Mind is not able to focus on anything. So much of distraction, wavering, and conflicts. Some great spiritual teachers have given some solutions to this problem. You think of an ocean or the sky. An ocean is vast and it accommodates all, still remains intact, calm and peaceful, tranquil. So also the sky. Sky is the symbol of omnipresence. The ocean is a symbol of omnipresence and also immanence. All the mighty rivers empty their waters in the ocean, but the ocean remains calm and quiet. So also the sky, which is so all-pervading. So when mind gets disturbed, if we can focus on the all-pervading nature of the sky, or the tranquil, calm and peaceful nature of the ocean, that will help us. These are all some of the tools which are prescribed. That will help us to reduce wavering of the mind. Another problem that is again Bhranti Darsana. Sometimes it is interpreted by modern psychiatrists as hallucinations and delusions. Like, you know, see the prophet syndrome, or sometimes it is called, these persecution mania. People feel, or sometimes, you know, these audible or visual hallucinations or false visions. That's one. People suddenly coming, we suddenly feeling, oh, we have got something wonderful. Sudden elation. That this kind of, some very, very often, many spiritual seekers who are not sincere enough or who have got some problem, sometimes they feel sudden elation, only to be followed by a kind of depression. In other words, MDP, manic depressive psychosis, that sometimes they call interpreted that way. But in spiritual practices, this is often possible. See, Patanjali, with great insight into spiritual science, points out, these are some of the problems, false thoughts, false ideas called delusion, and false visions called hallucinations, audible and visual hallucinations. All these are possible. Sometimes you feel an angel came and requested you to do something wonderful for the good of the world, and if you take it on your head, it leads the misery of the whole humanity. It happens. So these ideas, prophet syndrome, sometimes they call it. This is the negative aspect of it, the destructive aspect of it. The other less destructive aspect is the feeling that, well, we have not yet made enough spiritual progress. It is purely subjective. It doesn't do any harm to others. You don't see an angel coming and asking you to do something very wicked. Nothing of the kind. Here what happens is, you get the feeling that you are not making enough progress. So that complaint, or sometimes you are making too much of progress. Both kind of Bhranti Darsana means these false visions and ideas, delusions can come to spiritual seekers. That's why Swami Vivekananda in one context made a statement, most probably in Inspired Talks in Thousand Island Park. He said, well, if somebody comes and tells you, I'm inspired, God came to me, or somebody came to me and gave me very wonderful instruction, and then if that person is saying and doing things which are not good for others, then don't listen to him. So that's the idea behind. Because when we are fully established in ethical moral disciplines like non-violence, absence of greed, freedom from vices, and then purity, internal purity, mental purity, physical purity, contentment, not having any desire for anything, absolute purity of mind. If such a person starts spiritual practices, he gets a message that makes him a saint. That people without any of these qualities, if they start spiritual practices, in most cases, they get false ideas. That's why Patanjali insisted again and again that even beginners should try to cultivate slowly by slow degrees these important spiritual qualities like non-violence, truthfulness, not having any hatred for anyone, complete freedom from vices, greed, not having any desire for anything that belongs to other people, internal purity, mental purity, physical purity, all these are important. That's why in the life of all the great teachers, Jesus Christ went to the desert in 40 days. He was tested by Satan, means he was practicing intense yoga. Yoga doesn't mean Patanjali's yoga or any. Patanjali is speaking about a universal spiritual method, universal spiritual practice. That is what yoga actually means. Yoga is defined as a path that takes you from the human to the your spiritual dimension. That's what is yoga. That elevates and sublimates your consciousness so that from human dimension, you evolve to a spiritual divine dimension. You look upon the whole humanity as one spiritual family, as one spiritual brotherhood, looking upon everyone as brothers and sisters, as one spiritual family, not looking upon anybody as strangers, alien. That is what yoga is all about. So, if a spiritual seeker is not fully established, if he becomes at least familiar with these fundamental disciplines, many of the distractions that come to our mind, the starting of spiritual practices can be avoided. Conflicting thought currents will completely vanish if we can tell ourselves, well, the whole world is pervaded by the divine spirits. Everything is God's creation. The whole humanity is one spiritual family. This kind of auto-suggestion, if that is the term to be used, before starting recitation of mantra, chanting the mantra, practice of mantra, that will reduce the conflicts and distractions to a considerable extent. And that also will reduce the possibility of all these obstructions and distractions, which are called antaraya in Sanskrit, which Patanjali lists out. Means illness, doubting tendency, mental lethargy, callousness or carelessness, heaviness, fatigue of mind and body, and then wavering of the mind. And then again, false thoughts, false ideas, false visions. All these can be avoided through a process of mental auto-suggestion. The whole humanity, the entire world is pervaded by the presence of the Lord. The whole humanity is one spiritual brotherhood, spiritual family. If we can repeat this again and again, then that removes many of the conflicts. So in one of the Vedic mantras, it is said, you know, let there be peace on earth, in the ocean, in the skies, in the valleys, in the mountains, in all human beings, in the entire animal kingdom. Let there be rains, let there be prosperity, let there be happiness and peace and harmony and tranquility for everyone and everything in this world. This is one of the famous prayers in the Rig Veda Samhita, which is sometimes repeated with translations by spiritual seekers. So this strong, intense desire for goodness and sublimity and peace in others removes many of these natural distractions and obstructions. Then there is another problem. Alabdha bhumigatvam. That's a feeling that I'm not reaching my goal. I'm working too hard. In one of the question and answer sessions which I attended when I was a quite small school student, in a lecture given by one of the world famous swamis of the order, he was referring to a letter that he received. So some devotees who had taken initiation from the Swamiji wrote to him, Well, Swamiji, what should I do? Then, so he wrote back, well, you must sincerely practice meditation, prayer, and so on. After 1 month, the letter came, yeah, I have done it, now what should I do next? Then he wrote, you must never stop the practice of the spiritual practices. After 2 weeks, another letter, that also I have done, now what should I do? Again, my mind is full of conflicts. So sometimes what happens, you know, a feeling that we are not reaching anywhere. Of course, this is possible for two types of seekers. There are some very intense spiritual seekers. But for them, if you tell them, well, there is no end in spiritual life. Spiritual life is not to be treated as a compartmentalized, small unit of existence. Spirituality, it is practically a lifelong way of life. It is not a doctrine to be practiced, not a single discipline, total philosophy of life. That's what spirituality. So, the feeling that we are not reaching anywhere may be due to the fact that we have not started at all. In 99% of the cases for many spiritual seekers, this constant doubting tendency, feeling of dissatisfaction, discontentment, is due to the fact that we have not even started the journey. Because once we sincerely start the journey and make some progress, we will find traffic signs, signals, this way to go, this way to go. So we are able to make progress. So Patanjali says, this feeling that we are not making enough progress should be understood as a natural obstacle. And once we understand that this is a natural obstacle in the spiritual life of all seekers, then it won't be a problem anymore. It becomes a problem when we are not aware of it and when we have to confront it without any previous preparation. But once we understand that this is a problem, no problem. If you get instruction, there is traffic problem on one highway, then you take another highway. But once you reach there is a traffic problem, then you understand it's a big dilemma. So that's why Patanjali has given a list of these problems. The same idea is anavasthitattvam. But again, even after making progress, the feeling that we have not reached. That's another, these two different types of problems. Because we have not started the journey, we feel a kind of discontentment, dissatisfaction. Then we have made some progress, then also we may confront this kind of feeling. Means we have not made enough progress. Actually, there is a psychological explanation to this. See, when we make some progress, we forget that we have already made some progress. We forget the point from where we started. And we only look forward to the long distance we have yet to travel. So that could be one reason for sincere seekers who have made sufficient progress to feel that they have not made any progress at all. So that is a natural problem. That should not be a big dilemma. Once we understand that these nine obstructions and obstacles are natural in the life of every sincere seeker, they will not be big problems. They will become less problematic rather. These are the natural obstacles and obstructions that take us away from our spiritual path. Here, but again, when we start the spiritual life, Patanjali gives further insight into some of the problems of mental distractions. One is, see, a feeling of discontentment. Depression. and again agitation of the mind. Sometimes somebody, people say, trembling in the body, and then disturbance in breathing system. All these are possible distractions. So, one common solution to these problems, I have already explained this morning, is this. We must, first of all, make our mind ready. Making our mind ready means slowly sublimating our tendencies and desires. That's one way to take our mind to a higher and higher level. For example, when we sit and start to meditate or to do japa, without making any effort to prepare our mind. So 10 hours we work in the office. So meditation is also one of the items to be done that day. And after that we sit and meditate. Or when we travel, we may have seen different images with our eyes, signboards, pictures. We may have heard different sounds with our ears. We may have discussed many topics related to secular, normal life situations. All these are now working within the mind as tendencies and impressions. Now, immediately if you start to repeat the mantra or start meditate, what happens? The moment we repeat the mantra, all these images, sounds, visual and audio images will come to the mental level. And remember, every memory is a re-experience according to Patanjali system, Vedanta system. So give an example. Suppose you see an image or a picture or a photo which naturally creates a distraction in spiritual life. This morning or a few minutes earlier, or maybe has seen 10 years earlier, but it has created a strong image, registered a strong tendency, a vritti in our mind. When we start spiritual life, either tendency that we accumulated this morning or this moment or 10 years back, with equal possibility can re-emerge in the mind. If it is a visual object, we will see that visual object again, just as we saw it the previous year or 10 years earlier or that morning. There is no difference at all seeing 10 years back and seeing now at the mental level. There is no difference. The only difference is when we see an object directly, our mind and eyes go together and focus on the visual object. When we remember that experience, eyes do not have anything to do, but mind openly, or clearly, evidently, sees the same visual image. The effect on the mind is the same. Often, the accumulated memory creates a greater distraction in spiritual life than the visual image. The same thing, the same is true of audible image also. We hear a sound, a song this morning, evening we try to practice it. We are able to practice it because we are re-experiencing, reliving the same experience of listening to the music that day morning. We are able to hear it again, that's why we are able to repeat it. So every memory, every tendency is a re-experience of whatever we have experienced in previous life situations. And every repeated experience consolidates, reinforces its effect on the mind. The tendencies become stronger and stronger as often as we really bring these memories back to our mind. Therefore, what is required is we have to counteract these negative tendencies and images and memories through positive tendencies, through positive images and positive memories. How to do that? You fill your mind with positive tendencies, positive images. So before starting the mantra spiritual practice, you read a book of a great spiritual personality, read the teachings of great spiritual teachers, discuss spiritual ideas with your friends, fellow spiritual seekers, because they will counteract and neutralize, to some extent at least, the impact of negative tendencies and impressions that you have gathered. So Patanjali makes a statement, Vibhrida Bhavana, means every negative tendencies and impressions and obstacles can be neutralized through opposite tendencies and impressions. So as I said at the beginning of this session, I said mind is like a bag. Positive tendencies and negative tendencies, both are active in this bag. If the negative tendencies and impressions become dominant, then we feel all these obstructions. Even a minor headache, I have a headache today, I would rather not meditate today. Because mind is not willing to do it. Mind is not ready to do that. But mind gives a false excuse. Mind is a mighty philosopher, a deceptive philosopher. It says, today you are sick, so better do it tomorrow. The reason is, we want to, but we are not will. We cannot do that. There's a conflict between will and mind, intellect and mind. Intellect wants to make progress, but mind is not willing to participate. And every spiritual practice has got one aim in mind, that is to bridge the gap between intellect and mind. We all live at mental level, not intellectual level. If we could all live at intellectual level, we could all become philosophers, saints, overnight. But it doesn't happen because we are carrying this burden, this bag, tendencies and impressions. So Patanjali also makes a very creative, constructive suggestion. You fill this bag with more and more positive tendencies, positive actions, positive images, positive memories. Now, there is another dimension to this. Patanjali is not portraying a bleak, unpleasant picture of the realities of human life. In fact, in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 6th chapter, which is a kind of a dialogue between Arjuna and Krishna, there's an interesting dialogue. Arjuna puts a question before Krishna. Ayadi Shraddhayopedo Yoga Chalidamanasaha Aprapi Yoga Samsiddhim Kangatim Krishna Gachati. So, Arjuna asks one question. Look here, Arjuna. Suppose a spiritual seeker who is very sincere, very earnest, very honest, he practices meditation and japa. But then he doesn't succeed, he falls by the wayside, he dies away before he makes any progress. What happens to that person? Is everything lost? Then it's a terrible fate. We make sincere effort and we don't succeed, or we don't succeed enough. Is everything lost? In answer to this, the teacher of Gita, Lord Krishna, gives a great promise. He says, nothing is lost. Parthanaiveha namutra vinasas tasya vidyade nahi kalyana krutkaschi durgadim tadagachati. This is the answer. The answer is very simple. Whatever little effort you have made in this life, you have meditated only 10 minutes only every day, could not make, do more than that. You listen to a few lectures, and because of duties and responsibilities, other problems, you couldn't make enough progress. Nothing will be lost. Or you have done some noble deeds, not necessarily belief in God. You have done something good for others. With total unselfishness, without any selfish motive, you have done good for others, worked for the welfare of other people, your neighbors. All these good actions, whether you have done spiritual practices for yourself or done some unselfish service to others, all these will create a capital, a bank balance. And this will remain in the back of your mind stuff, chitta. So what happens? You carry this back as in relay running, you know, to the next life. So Vedanta insists on one point. This life doesn't end with a piece of stone in the cemetery. The body is pushed to that electronic crematorium. This journey doesn't end. Only the physical body, its journey comes to an end. It is made of five elements, matter. But there is something deeper, invisible, which is imperishable. We call it Atman or consciousness. So, it remains intact and it continues to exist. It will be born again in the next life. And when it is born in the next life, whatever good deeds you have done, whatever good spiritual practices you have done in this life, which have created a spiritual capital, bank balance, spiritual bank balance, you will be benefited by this spiritual capital. So he says, Tatratam buddhi samyogam labhade paurvadehikam kriyade tato bhuyas samsiddhu kurudantana. The verse is very significant. Lord Krishna says, if you have done some solid spiritual practices, at least for some time in this life, and didn't fully succeed, couldn't do enough, and you die, what happens? These good tendencies and impressions which you accumulated in this life will remain in your mind stuff, and that will help you to move forward in your spiritual life, in the next life. So the tendencies and impressions created in this life, good tendencies and good impressions created and accumulated in this life will become a great spiritual capital, and that will help you to move forward in spiritual life. That's why we are helpless, because we have accumulated some good tendencies. So we have to function, we have to move in this way. It is not fatalism, it's pure science. It's not fatalism. Vedanta is the very antithesis of predeterminism and fatalism. Purely science, scientific. We do certain things because of our character. And our character is the end result, the substratum, the abstract residual form of whatever we have done in the past. And that character again determines our activities and tendencies in this life, which again enrich or remodel our character again. This cycle continues unless we realize that we are something beyond this body, beyond this mind, beyond intellect. We are the all-pervading Atman. This is the answer. Which means all these problems can be solved, countered, if you try to keep all this in mind, which means any good action, any good tendency, anything that creates a positive tendency in our mind is welcome. It will enrich our character. It will help us to practice japa and meditation with greater and greater concentration. In the practice of japa, so, as I said earlier, first, mind should be made ready. If there are problems, it's because of the dominance of negative tendencies we accumulated that can be countered by creating more and more positive tendencies, reading more spiritual books, discussing more and more of spiritual ideas, and listening to spiritual ideas, contemplating on spiritual ideas. All these will help us to enrich the positive aspect of this human character. It's called internal organ. It's called. So now we will have interaction for about 35-40 minutes. So we can discuss any topic that we have discussed so far, or even any general topic related to this subject. Yes, sublimation is always a change, an elevation for a change for the better. Substitution may not always be a change for the better. It could be a change for the worse as well sometimes. So sublimation, in spiritual life, sublimating our desires, that's a term I used. In fact, I understand the context. We are not able to concentrate on spiritual themes because we have desire for spiritual life, but we also have desire for non-spiritual ideas also. So those non-spiritual desires can be sublimated. So every human being has got one focus of desires. So all these desires can be sublimated. Sublimation means refining, purification, elevating them to a higher level so that they will be more helpful in spiritual life. Sublimation clearly implies a change for the better, an improvement. But substitution need not necessarily for the better. That's I get.
In the mantra, there could be a bija shabda. So that is the one that determines the relationship of the aspirant towards the ishta. Is that a fixed thing? Is there because on a daily basis you may not have the same mood or bhava towards the ishta. And how to counteract that monotony, or some days when you're not able to create the bhava?
Yes. You know, these bija, in fact, the same bija mantra is joined with the names of different deities. So it is the individual name of the independent deity that determines its implication. So let us say, I will explain. First, on the universal, general level, we have got Omkara, which is the all-pervading Atman, Supreme Reality. Then Hrim, then there are different bija aksharas, bija mantras. There are many bija mantras which are joined with many other independent deities. Then at the third level, we have got independent names of deities joined with the bija aksharas and also with maybe Omkara. Okay. So if we are not able to practice this, we feel that, well, you cannot meditate. Physically, you cannot bring yourself to sit and do japa and meditation. You read a good book, or you listen to a lecture which also is spiritual content. Somehow you should try to link your mind with some spiritual idea. More concrete practices, grosser practices are easier and less problematic. More abstract and subtle practices like japa or meditation, etc., may be a little more internal and may become more problematic. But you can listen, you can read. All these will keep you at the spiritual realm, the world of spiritual ideas. So that can be a good substitute. Here the word substitute can be used. Instead of doing japa, if you cannot do that at all due to distraction of mind, read a holy book, a related spiritual book.
But if you are able to do japa, but that the mood or the relationship that is indicated by the Bija Shabda is not something you're able to consistently have when you sit down for meditation in the morning. What are some of the tools or techniques?
Yes, according to Patanjali system, yoga system, you know, mind moves in waves. So when the vritti or the tendency rises, there is knowledge. But then it comes down and again the vritti rises again. That middle level, the intermediary level called sthiti. So at that time it is related to tamoguna, inaction. But it is there is no knowledge at all at that level. So first of all we must understand mind doesn't move in a continuous progression. There will be ups and downs. That's very natural. But when the mind goes down too low, then before it reaches the rock bottom, we can save it from reaching the rock bottom by diverting it to spiritual ideas, reading a book, listening to devotion songs. All these will help the mind, prevent the mind from reaching the lower level. That's a very important thing, because sometimes people will, I must either meditate or do nothing. That is wrong. That is a very dangerous idea. I must be able to sit and meditate without any distraction, or I would rather don't do that. That's wrong. If you can't meditate and there are too many distractions and obstacles you confront, then better divert the mind to reading a good book, spiritually elevating book, listening to devotional music, or if there are fellow spiritual seekers discussing with them spiritual ideas. That could be done. Somehow keeping the mind from hitting the rock bottom. That's why there are different levels. In the spiritual classic Bhagavata Purana, there are 9 methods are given here. Sravanam, Girtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakhyam, Atmanivedanam. So, you listen, you recite, you remember, try to remember. If you have got a photo, you can do worship. You can keep flowers, decorate, or you can write an article in spiritual life. Try to remember. Any of these processes, any of these methods can be used. Mind will never be in such a miserable condition that you are not able to do any of these things. Mind will never reach such a level. So mind should somehow be kept in touch with a link attached to some kind of spiritual activity or idea. That will gradually help us to move forward. So we'll continue this. Today we have 3:32. Okay, 5 o'clock. Yes. Okay. 5 o'clock. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om. That's it.